I'm a teacher at Oldham Hume Grammar School. Very recently, I actually passed over my role of peer mentor coordinator. I'm going to tell you what the peer mentors are soon. But it was after we'd done the biography, I just wanted to clarify that. Because I'm also the sixth form academic mentor, and I'm more heavily involved with the sixth form now or with that role. But I was the peer mentor coordinator for 3 years. And we are a grammar school from ages 3 up to 18. So I took over a group which was actually called the Anti-Bullying Alliance, and it was a group of student volunteers that wanted to help other students with their issues and problems. It was a successful group, but when I took over, I wanted to widen it out, not just about bullying, but to cover all sorts of issues, help each other with all kinds of issues. We train the students. We train them in how to listen and how to be confidential, how to know when to pass a serious issue on to someone else if they felt that they couldn't get any further with a student. Face-to-face support, but as Michael was saying, actually there wasn't so much of that going on, the face-to-face support, when I took over. And it was just a perfect time when one of my senior managers had been at a business lunch and had met Michael in Oldham and said, Hannah, I think you need to get this guy in. I think you need to hear about this app. It sounds really brilliant. So that's what I did. We do things like deliver assemblies, help write personal social education lessons and deliver those. We do some charity raising events, all kinds of different things we do in school. So just before we got tooting, and because it was the beginning of me taking over, we had a campaign. We called it the Unique campaign, and we wanted to celebrate all our differences, that we're all unique and we collectively support each other in being different within our school. So this was our logo. We wrote blogs. Jade wrote a blog for us, brilliant blog. We had these, the t-shirts, messages, assemblies, and we created a piece of artwork, which is this here, if you can see it. We are all unique. That's made up of fingerprints from everyone in the whole school. They came over the break and lunchtime over the course of a week, gave us their thumbprint. Teachers as well as students, all our support staff, everybody. So you can't see it so well, but it's in the heart of our school. When you come into our school and you walk up the main corridor, it's there. So we're pretty proud of that. We were featured in The Guardian, The Independent and the local newspapers as well. They sought out our opinions about various issues, which I'll come on to. So we got... I heard about Michael, as I said, from one of our senior leaders and got him in and heard about it. I thought this week-long campaign was a perfect time to launch to the school. And also at this time, BBC Northwest, or shortly afterwards, they were covering Toot being launched in the local area, and they came in and they interviewed us, and we ended up on BBC News, which is quite exciting. So I thought it'd be nice, but it's only 2 minutes for you to listen to the clip and hear from some of my peer mentors. We'll have to just come out of the presentation because I'm not very technically aware and I haven't edited it that well. So just so it can play.
Apologies.
Yeah, no worries.
It doesn't like moving back out of the presentation.
So it's me being really awkward, I'm afraid. It's just just under that one, isn't it? It's that one.
But I think it's only going to give me the sound. I have a suspicion. We'll see how we go.
Now, tackling issues such as bullying, racism and radicalisation is a constant battle for schools. Pupils often don't have the confidence to come forward, fearing it will make their situation worse.
But a new free online app developed here in the Northwest is giving students a quick and anonymous way to report problems. It's being introduced at every school in the region from today. Abby Jones has been to a school in Oldham to see the difference it's already making.
Bullying, extremism, homophobia... Pupils don't stop being vulnerable when the school gates are locked. Mobile phones and the internet mean they can be targeted anywhere and at any time.
This is one girl who was suffering from some sort of cyberbullying from a girl outside of school. They were leaving voice messages and sending mean texts to them.
These pupils at Oldham Hume Grammar School mentor other students in trouble. For the last month, they've been using the new free online app Toot Toot. They log on to see what pupils have reported and can reply with advice or take serious issues to a teacher.
I think it is really needed now because many people are shy to come and speak to you or think that people will notice that they're coming to speak to a peer mentor or anything. So having this means they can do it completely in their own time.
The app means students or parents can report concerns anonymously if they want, online, and attach evidence. Staff can then track and write up incidents in one place without paper forms. The school can see what's been reported and pass data on to bodies like Ofsted at the click of a button.
Within 24 hours, we already had a case online, and we were able to act on that at once. We've got about 12 cases at the moment, and I think it's a very powerful and effective tool.
This is one of around 100 schools in the Northwest that have been piloting the app. It's proved so successful, it will now be rolled out across all 4,500 schools across the region.
It's really unique, and it's the only system in the UK which is free. The pressures of young people in schools, I think it's only a good thing. If it helps one person in a school, then it's worth doing its job.
So we've got this one case of a year 10 boy who's got exam stress.
The app can help students with issues like homework and relationships, as well as more serious problems. The hope is it will help students feel and stay safe in and out of school. Abby Jones, BBC Northwest Tonight, Oldham.
Okay, so I'm sorry you didn't see the visuals, but got the flavour of the clip. So that was the launch of Toot Toot. So how do we use it? I upload year 10, 11, 12 and 13 peer mentors as people who can answer messages. There's myself that oversaw it until very recently. All the heads of year. And we also have what are called two pastoral directors, one for the boys, one for the girls. They're all loaded up as well. They see all the messages coming in, but I decide who would answer what message. Lower level messages, I would ask my students to answer because sometimes they're in a much better place to answer a message. Other times, more serious or what we call higher level, it would be the head of year or the pastoral directors would get involved. So everybody from year five upwards to the sixth form have a login and a password and can send the messages in. But I only have my older peer mentors that are trained that can answer messages as well as staff. We really, really believe in the tool and think it's really powerful. And one of the things I think it's, well, a key thing, is getting to problems and getting to children when they're reasonably, they haven't got out of control, they haven't reached crisis point, so you can put the support in to help them. We've had various success stories because we've got to children early enough. And I do just believe in giving the tools to children, you know, as young as primary school and talking about these issues that young will really help them, you know, become more resilient and able to deal with issues as they get older. That is how we used it. In preparation for this talk, I spoke to the two pastoral directors at our school that have got over 6 years teaching experience between them, just to get some of their feedback on children's mental health. So you can see here some of the key issues that we're facing, particularly with social media addiction. We've got a lot of children that find it really hard to put the phone down, really hard on an evening to put it down. They go to bed with it next to them. So we get very, very tired children because they've been answering messages all through the night. And it's easy for me to say, switch it off, don't do that. But I'm not from that generation. And they can't seem to do that. We also deal with a lot of arguments on after the weekend or after an evening because on Snapchat somebody said something, someone's responded, everybody else piles in, and then as teachers we're sorting a load of problems out in lessons and all of this sort of thing going on. So there's some of the key issues. Have the issues always been there? I mean, people say about children's mental health, they've always had problems, we've always had problems, it's always been there. Well, yes, with some, and we are better identifying them, but we haven't always had the internet, have we, and social media. And the genie's out of the bottle, I think, about that. But as Michael touched upon, young people today, that's their world and they use these things. It might be ironic we're suggesting an app to them when they're on the screen a lot of the time, but that is the world that they operate and communicate with each other in. And I think it's more about helping them be a balanced user of social media and knowing when to put the phone down and give themselves a break from it that's really important. The other thing that I spoke with the pastoral directors about and colleagues, we're teachers. We were trained to teach an academic subject. We did a little, I did a PGCE here in Cambridge over 20 years ago, and we didn't touch on children's mental health. Should it be part of the PGCE? There's all sorts of routes into teaching now. Should it be a part of that? Some of my colleagues think, no, I'm just a teacher of geography, maths or whatever. Others think, no, we should, but I'm struggling because I don't know what to do. And a lot of us use our instinct. We go on our instinct to help people, or we pass it on to somebody, you know, a child protection officer or someone else. But we're sort of flailing a lot of the time, I personally feel. And I think in our school, we've got a great pastoral system and we support our children a lot. But we're not mental health care workers. So I think that's an interesting subject, should be fully trained. There's a lot of lack of practical training for us teachers. And from school to school, you know, it's very different what support they get from outside agencies and within the school in terms of training. And sometimes it's sitting and listening. It's not the practical stuff that you need. And then finally... another thing I meant to say earlier. I am a teacher, but I'm a mother of a daughter with severe anxiety, and I'm in the CAMHS system with her at the moment, the Children's Adolescent Mental Health Service. She's got very bad anxiety, severe sleep disorder, and she's selectively mute at times as well. So I've got a personal experience of how frustrating it is being in this system. It's great when we see somebody, but we have lots of cancelled appointments, loads of time between appointments, they're underfunded and they're under-resourced. They're great when you get to see somebody. And that's what the pastoral directors find as well when they go outside for the services too, the waiting lists. Finally, they spoke about the parents and parents being unaware of child's social media usage and parents needing training and support. A lot of our parents aren't aware when problems have arisen that the child had a Snapchat account or on Facebook, they're on Instagram, because they don't fully understand the technology, or they might have known but they weren't that bothered, and they don't take the phone off the child at bedtime, or I don't know. Our pastoral directors feel that parents need more support and training, but how do we facilitate that? Do we do it in schools? Is it up to us to help the parents? I think that's another interesting question that we might talk about this afternoon. Okay, want to finish there because I'd really like to hand over to Jade. So I hope there's some interesting, you know, issues for you to think about. Jade, she's been with us in Oldham Hume Grammar School since primary age. She's now actually at another sixth form college. But I'm very, very grateful for her to come along with me today and speak from her unique perspective as a 16-year-old. Okay, over to you, Jade. Thank you.
As a young person myself, I'm perhaps the most uniquely placed person in the room to talk about adolescent mental health. Before I go any further, I imagine it would be helpful if I explain my background a little first. During my early teens, my struggle with my mental health reached its peak. I was simultaneously struggling from chronic depression and low-level anxiety, and as a result, I had incredibly low self-esteem, became increasingly isolated at school, and wouldn't leave my bed for days, at times skipping school and quite literally losing the will to live. Eventually, on advice of my school nurse, I visited my GP, who dismissed my problems on account of me just going through the typical teenage girl experience. and had no choice but to go to my school counsellor, who wasn't properly trained. On numerous occasions, he told me that depression wasn't real and all in the mind. And even if my GP had taken my problem seriously, the waiting list for CAMHS, Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services, was over 6 months long, enough for anyone to slip through the cracks and end up in a situation even more serious. In preparation for this conference, I spoke to a range of friends and peers. Ooh. Friends and peers, many of whom have experienced poor mental health themselves. And the predominant issue which they talked about, whether they were suffering from eating disorders and attending the lowest achieving comprehensives in Salford, on disability benefits and well acquainted with the inside of the local psychiatric ward, or public school students suffering from chronic depression, is the obvious inadequacy of mental health service provision for young children and young people. However, I fear that there is only so much large-scale change that we can effect to reverse the years of mere lip service to mental health given by successive governments. The Labour's creation of the Shadow Minister for Mental Health position and Theresa May's recent announcement to include mental health training for 16 and 17-year-olds as part of the National Citizenship Service are both welcome moves. As a result, much of the campaigning work I've been involved with has been from the grassroots. For example, my local youth council, which I was elected onto 3 years ago and now represent in the UK Youth Parliament, commissioned a theatre piece by Oldham Theatre Workshop, which focused on self-harm and depression in teenage boys, a demographic sadly notorious for suffering mental health problems in silence. It toured practically every school in the local area, and after each performance, a queue of boys would form to speak to a professional to open up about their experiences. I still consider this the most important project we have undertaken to date, not only because it showed clear outcomes, but more importantly, because the focus of so much work around mental health in young people is so narrow in its focus, and I'm acutely aware that not enough is done to tackle mental illness in young men. After all, I'm sure many of us are aware that the biggest killer of males under 45 is suicide. Our youth council also funds COOTH, a web-based counselling service for young people, which has seen its uptake increase year on year, a success not dissimilar to Toot Toot. You may have also read about a fellow member of Youth Parliament who recently broke the record for the longest word, I won't repeat it here, spoken on parliamentary estates while speaking on the lack of parity between mental and physical illnesses. In addition to this, in both 2014 and 2015, mental health was a top issue chosen by members of Youth Parliament following debate at the House of Commons over the issues to focus our campaigns on. Although we are all too aware that mental health provision is inadequate, at least there are constructive efforts by young people to affect change in other ways, such as through challenging the stigma around mental health. Believe me when I say it is often adults, including teachers, who stigmatise more than young people themselves. And locally campaigning for mental health education and citizenship classes in schools. I also ran a workshop with Oldham Youth Council and social media, involving both teenagers and parents in the discussion. A mother told me of her concerns about the over-sexualisation of girls from a young age, such as her own 8-year-old daughter, and how she fears that her daughter is overly concerned about her weight and body image before she has even started secondary school. She wants to see her daughter grow up to be a strong and resilient young woman, not torn down by a falsified construction of the outside world. In response to concerns such as these, the Youth Council has a blanket ban on the use of photo editing software and any promotional images we create, so to set a good example to our young members. Our youth mayor also noted his observation of a perceived lack of support in South Asian communities, himself being of Bangladeshi origin, and how there needs to be more space for dialogue with health professionals. Another suggested an online support website for parents to find resources and information on child and adolescent mental health. A prevalent issue is the narrow scope from which we are viewing mental health. Of course, exam stress and body image pressure are very real issues which should not be trivialised, but they should not also be the only issues discussed, indeed if mental health is discussed at all in schools. However, this leads me to another problem. There is only so much that schools can do. When I talk to students with higher level, for lack of a better term, issues, for instance, bipolar disorder or schizophrenia, they lamented the lack of attention given to these conditions in favour of lower level issues such as stress over academic pressure. Although I must stress that this is still important, on average 96 people commit suicide every year due to exam stress. We cannot over-rely on simplifying so complex and serious to just slogans such as "you are not your grades" or "it's just a bad day, not a bad life." I don't want to direct these frustrations at schools. They cannot act as a comprehensive safety net for all pupils all the time, particularly in an age of squeezed budgets and stretched resources. In an ideal world, not only would we have an efficient and well-funded mental health support service, but that the problems and crises are actually prevented. I'm sure many of you in this room are parents or have grandchildren or have close relationships with young people in some way. And I would imagine that the first instinct of most, if not all of you, will be to do your best to help your teenager if they admitted to you that they were suffering from mental health issues. If only the overall picture was that straightforward. For many of us, it can be difficult to fully open up to our parents. And even when we do it, we'd regret it soon afterwards. One friend recalled a weekend during which they hadn't left the bed or eaten anything once, and their father stormed in and shouted, "You are depressed," at them. I hope that his response was more due to his exasperation at his inability to deal with the situation, due to his lack of knowledge on how to help more than anything else. But this lack of confidence and basic awareness to deal with these issues is a problem. According to the Mental Health Foundation, 70% of young people suffering from mental health problems did not have appropriate interventions at an early age. And I'm sorry to say that I am not surprised. As I said earlier, I spoke to young people from a wide range of backgrounds who had experienced a multitude of problems, and I'm struggling to think of a single person who told me that they were happy with the nature of their mental health provision and complained about the patchiness and lack of early support. However, I think it would be superfluous of me to only regale you with the litany of problems with the mental health provision for young people in this country, as that would neither be pleasant nor relevant to the majority of you. I've also actually begun to see real advancements in campaigning. For instance, I'm on a Greater Manchester-wide charity promoting youth mental health matters, particularly so by engaging with schools to campaign for better education, although even then I have some reservations on how it mostly targets grammar and private school pupils, thus leaving out a large proportion of disadvantaged young people who may not already be able to access adequate mental health support in school, particularly if said school is a large comprehensive which has to stretch its only school nurse across a few thousand pupils over multiple sites. Thankfully, my college, which is a large establishment in a traditionally deprived area of Manchester, has long stressed the importance of mental wellbeing by having a well-developed counselling service and inviting parents to talks from mental health professionals during the year. The elephant in the room, which I've not ignored up to now, is social media. For what it's worth, my opinion is that a balanced view needs to be taken on this. Many of the people who I spoke to stressed that social media can actually be a helpful thing, a place for teenagers who would otherwise feel excluded from the mainstream to find friends with similar interests, as well as for somewhere to talk about their issues in a less judgmental space. On the other hand, there are reams and reams of recent evidence to suggest that it's the cause of all manner of anxieties and stresses in modern life. For example, a cursory glance around news websites the other day provided me with the headlines, "Stress and social media fuel mental health crisis among girls," The Guardian 3 weeks ago. "Social media has teens on the brink of a major mental health crisis," The Mirror last week. And "Social media exacerbates young mental health problems," The BBC last month. It is clearly a double-edged sword, and this is an area where parents and guardians can take an active role in supporting their child. No, I don't mean by sending them friend requests on Facebook necessarily, but by discussing safe internet practices with your, especially younger children, so that they develop healthy habits later in life. Instead of forcing them away from their devices so they have a greater craving for the comfort of that blue glow of the screen, promote the benefits of being offline to them from time to time so they know naturally how to take a break. So, whilst I cannot deny that mental health provision for young people is patchy at best and insulting at worst, I do believe that things are looking positive. This time last year, I was in the midst of a serious bout of anxiety and felt isolated from my peer group at school to such an extent that it was infinitely preferable to merely spend the school day alone in the medical room with the doors closed, blinds drawn and lights off. If only I could go back into that time and tell me, despite that, all my convictions, things really did improve and that I'd end up here today speaking about it. Thank you.